most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes. And Jimmy, last night, Tennessee got the win, but pretty obvious that Rick Barnes was not a happy man.
Well, you're leading by 12 with about a minute left. Next thing you know, you're leading by two, and Jordan Bowden's going to the foul line with 5 seconds left to shoot a couple of free throws. He makes them, thank goodness for Tennessee, because otherwise they could have blown a huge lead in the last minute. And they didn't close the South Carolina game very well either with 4 turnovers in the last minute 50. So, yeah, Barnes is pretty frustrated. He made a comment about our basketball IQ goes out the window late in a game. We better get smarter.
Mm-hmm.
He's right.
Yes. And here's what Coach Barnes had to say last night after Tennessee's 4-point win over Vanderbilt.
Coach, just the last 10 minutes, I mean, what started clicking? What was the difference in putting that?
Well, first of all, I want to say this. I think Jerry Stackhouse has done just a phenomenal job. What he has done and how he's got his guys playing hard and they stay in it and does some really good stuff. Hard things to defend on the defensive end. And we did. We got going with our offense. We were moving. We were bringing more pace to it. That kind of thing. But then the last minute was really ridiculous. You know, I'm really upset about it. The guys knew it. I was upset at halftime with the way we started the game with missed layups and silly turnovers and just things that this time of year you shouldn't be making. And then we have the game, what, we're up 12-13 and just turn it over 3 straight times in ridiculous manner. And you can't be doing that. This time of year it's about playing basketball and understanding that every possession matters. And when we move the ball, we bring some pace, we can score. But when you start out the game missing those little layups that we have, I mean, think about it. I think about how many we missed tonight. And I know they're difficult, but I know Saban Lee made them look pretty easy and much smaller. And that's the frustrating thing. And I thought Jalen gave us good minutes other than that last turnover. I thought Ticket did some good things. And I thought JB was really solid. I mean, those two free throws are huge free throws, man, because they got the ability to go down and hit a three. But it's just I'm not real happy with John and Eve. I mean, the play Eve made there at the end of the game is just something you can't do. I mean, dribble the ball out, let somebody come from behind. You know they're coming. He should have picked it up. But when we were moving the ball, we had good offense. We had good flow at that point when we got the lead. They missed a couple really wide-open shots where we were fortunate. But I just not real happy with the way we started the game, and I wasn't very happy with the way we finished the game.
Rick, I know you just touched on Jordan's free throws at the end, but how satisfying was it to see him shoot shots in rhythm with confidence and distribute the ball like he did?
I mean, he's a guy that we're hoping he can – I mean, the one thing that you can't take away from him is he has really worked hard all year defensively, And again, we think he can make shots, and he's had a tough year, obviously. We know that, but we've got some big games left to go, and we hope that this is when he starts knocking some down. But I did think he played with confidence, and I thought he had a good pace about him on the offensive end.
What makes John Fulkerson so good at drawing as many fouls as he does?
Well, you know, I mean, he's quicker than you think, and, you know, he's quick. He's got a nice first step. But, you know, when he's locked in, yeah, I think he's a tough guy to defend because he can – he needs space sometimes. Sometimes he doesn't. But, you know, from the beginning tonight, I mean, he wasn't there. I mean, we knew it. I took him out early. And this time of year, your key guys have got to bring it every night. Every night. It can't be when you're playing well. It can't be when you're behind and you got to make a push. They're the ones that have to set the tone early, and he didn't do it. Eve had a chance for a little 6-7 foot jumper. He tries to throw the ball away, or he throws it away. The older guys this time of year, man, believe me, they should be the ones that are totally locked in, leading the way, and our young guys need it. And Santi at the end got tired, but he can't continue to turn it over 6 times. I mean, you can't. And 3 of his were, again, were ridiculous turnovers where he just again, I tell them it's not respecting the game the way you need to respect the game. Did I answer your question?
Rick, with a really difficult closing stretch, what would be the best-case scenario in terms of your player, what your players do now for the team to really finish strong?
Great question. One, we should look at it as an opportunity with where we are right now that you get to play the top half of the league with guys that are there are opportunities there, but they're difficult. You're gonna have to play well. We can't make the mistakes we've made the last two games. We can't. And until we figure that out, it's again, John, I could tell you we've been through a lot with this team. I mean, a lot of different scenarios, but now forget it because we've proven that we can compete with any team. And now it's about this group of guys, and we're probably as healthy as we've been all year long right now. And Josiah has been back one game today. He wasn't very effective. But now it's go time. It's go time. And there's opportunities there to be had, but you're going to have to make it work or it won't work. But what I want to see us do, I want to see improvement. Not just physically, but mentally. I don't want to see us make the kind of mistakes we made tonight to close that game out. Because you can't. If you do, it's going to go by you. And it kind of what happened against South Carolina, to be quite honest with you. You know, we had those same mistakes where turnovers and you know, we did a better job on the free throw line tonight. But we just can't – I don't even know how many turnovers we had tonight. We had 17 turnovers, but when your point guard has six, and then again, Eve had three, Folky four. That's ten. That's two games in a row we've gotten 10 turnovers from a point guard and a post players, and those two guys combined with it, you can't do it. You can't, and you just keep digging yourself a hole to where you almost have to be perfect, and nobody thinks you can play this game perfectly. And I am frustrated because I think we're better than what I think we should be better than what other people might think, and we're not going to lower our standard. You know, I had Admiral Schofield and Lamonte both talk to him after tonight because I was upset at halftime. I was upset at the end of the game, and I thought those guys hit him with some good things. And it's important that they understand it and understand that they've got to do it now. And they were in the same situation as Admiral and those guys were when they were sophomores, and they went through it. They found a way to break through. This team's got to find a way to break through.
Rick, right here. Over the past 2 years, last year, I think with Grant and with Admiral as well, and this year with Eves and John, you have kind of developed those guys into being able to shoot like one of those turnaround fades in the post. And they seem like they're pretty much virtually unblockable shots. Just how much worked and how much, you know, what were the conversations like to get those guys to really buy into the ability to make those shots and take those shots?
Well, you know, we believe in it, and we believe those guys can do it. That's why we were upset to start of the second half. We missed a couple of those dinky ones, and Eve missed it, but he turned around and threw it back out. He should have gone up again. And Urosh missed, I think, one or two right there the same way. And you know what? I'm not going to say they're easy shots, but for those guys, I like to be that tall and see what I could do. Because when you watch a guy like Saban Lee go down there and find a way to put the ball in the basket, it is frustrating to watch in a game like that. But we believe in it. We believe in it. But I think those guys have to understand, again, I go back to doing their work early, getting their base ready. And we weren't. And then, you know, John called for the ball twice and didn't grab it with two hands, and we turned it over, and we're going to put the ball in there. I mean, there's no doubt. When we look at this group of guys, and, you know, I don't ever talk about next year and all that, but we realize these guys are going to be the guys we've got to develop over the next couple years. And they have developed. They have learned that it's – and I say this, and I'm not sure I'm right – I don't know yet if they truly understand when you are being game planned for every single night how hard it is to be a good player every single night. And that's something that both of those guys are learning. Do they have it right now? I don't think totally. And now they do a lot of things that are really good, but at this time of year, this is when those guys have got to be elite for us. And we need – again, I can understand some of the things that Santi Josiah, the freshman young guys do, even Olivier and Yurosh. But those two guys have played enough, been in enough big games that and we're going to put it in there. And you know what? Everybody knows we are. I mean, there's no secrets this time of year. And as we get it there, we're counting on those guys. They're not going to make them all, but they got to make the easy ones. And we started the game with about as easy a shot as you could get, and we couldn't make it. And I think when you start missing them right there, I think it can mess with your head if you're not mentally tough enough to handle it.
I know you weren't very happy with Santiago and Fulkerson at times, but they did have 26 second-half points. When they got it going, what were they doing well, and then why was Josiah so ineffective tonight?
Well, I thought Santi was searching for shots to start of the game. And, again, you guys have watched us play, and, you know, I thought we, again, settled for threes. And again, our whole game plan, we're going to – and we got him in foul trouble. You know, we want to get to the, I mean, we want to get to the foul line. We got to get there. I think that's a big part of this game. The best coaches I've ever coached against, their teams get fouled. They make more shots than the opponents even attempt. And so we're trying to teach our guys that three is always going to be there for us. All you got to do is look at our shooting percentage. I mean, it's going to always be there. And I do think this, when we play inside out, we can make those shots. But Santi, I thought early, was searching for shots. And I could probably say to you, you know, since he's been here, you know, maybe the fatigue factor setting in a little bit, but he's learned how to handle the ball. And he definitely, at the end of the game, I probably should have taken him out because his turnovers were just, he looked like he was fatigued. But I still think he should be tough enough to handle those situations. And then he can really shoot the ball. He really can. He's a terrific three-point shooter. And because of his three-point shot, it actually makes him quicker, and he's crafty. He can get you up in the air, get in the lane. He has great vision. Who's the other guy? Josiah. I think, again, when you miss 2 weeks, it's not an overnight fix where you're going to come back. I thought he did some good things against South Carolina. But tonight he never had a chance because he wasn't doing his work early on the defensive end. And now he had a foul where he, again, Saban Lee was – in the post, and post and Santi, where Santi didn't do his job to get around. And we talk about fix-it plays, and Josiah went over to try to fix it and fouled there. But on drives, he's got to learn to use his length. He can't get beside people. He's got to get in front of them. Didn't you ask about somebody else? Well, again, more effort. There is no doubt he was playing with more effort. He was working harder to try to get the ball, but he put more effort in it. And I think, again, Admiral said it. You know, when we're playing well, guys seem to be doing that. The best players are going to do it when things aren't going your way. They're going to keep fighting the same time. That's where he's got to be more consistent. He's got to, again, I mean, the first play, again, I can't explain it. I can't. I mean, he was, I think they got tangled up down there. And, I mean, that is a point-blank layup for a 6'9 guy. I think he should be dunking it myself. But there's no doubt when he got going, he put more effort into it. You could see that happening. And I thought the second half when Rob went back to when we got going, we brought the pace quicker. The first half we were not pushing pace. We were not getting into our offense quick. And we started playing with more pace, and that helped us.
You had mentioned Admiral Lamont had talked to the team after. What specifically did they kind of say, and could you sense some of the younger players maybe didn't play with them, how they kind of responded to what was said?
Well, I think the biggest thing, they said a couple of really good things where they were saying, hey, we were right where you guys are when we were sophomores, the exact same place, except we had Robert Hubbs, who had really been our security blanket that year, and we were right where we were, and then he got hurt, and, you know, his last 5-6 games, he couldn't play. He gave us everything he had. Well, we haven't had a security blanket since Lamonte went out. You know, he was our defensive guy. He was a guy that, in competitive situations, like, you know, you knew you had a guy that was going to make something happen and had been through it. And they talked about it, okay? We were there, and then we had to figure out how to break through, and that's where this team is right now. And how do you break through? You don't break through by playing well when things are going well. You break through by playing every possession like every possession matters. And, again, you don't have to be perfect. You don't. But you cannot be sloppy and walk around like, you know, it's not that big a deal. You can't turn the ball over the way we turn it over. You can't do that. You can't give 10, like we had 10 turnovers against South Carolina, and that's to take nothing away from them. That had nothing to do with anything other than us being careless with the ball. And then tonight at the end, you know, we thought the game was over, like a bunch of immature guys, and got sloppy, and the next thing you know, you're in a battle.
Was tonight a step back as a whole?
No, you can't say that. I hope it's a great learning opportunity for us, but I think we've been through a lot of learning opportunities, and I think we're going to still have a lot more. To be honest, until we do what we said, until we break through and understand truly how hard it is to play at this level night in and night out. I don't care who you're playing. And this league has proven that on any night, anybody can beat anybody, but the fact of the matter is, we won a game against I could sit here and rave about Jerry Stackhouse and what he's done and how hard his guys continue to play, and I think our guys play hard. Don't get me wrong, I do. I think they play hard. What they haven't comprehended yet is that the mental is to the physical, like Coach Knight always said, like 4 is to 1. That's the part that they haven't got yet, and that's the part that we've got to get, especially on the offensive end.
Rick Barnes, his comments, and certainly not happy with the way Tennessee closed it. Certainly glad they got a win, but goodness, when you have a 10, 12, 11-point lead, whatever it was, with a minute left, and it gets down to, I think it's 12-point lead with a minute left, gets down to 2?
Correct.
You got 3 turnovers in the last 60 seconds? As he said, that's not a mature basketball team, they're thinking they got it won and just kind of not putting it away like they should have.
Yeah, they very much left the door open. Mm-hmm. We'll get a quick break. Be back with more. That's Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Tell the truth. Isn't this better than hearing Boston's More Than a Feeling for the 10,000th time? 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. Let's check in with Joe. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Good afternoon, guys. Jimmy, there was a referee in that game last night that I often refer to as TV Teddy. You know who I'm talking about?
Teddy Valentine.
Well, I can remember 4 or 5 years ago, maybe not that far back, he was in a lot of games. You'd see him a lot, very demonstrative, waving his arms, being kind of a showboat. And then I didn't see him for a while, and then all of a sudden he popped back up again. He doesn't seem quite so demonstrative. Did they sit him down for a while?
Not to my knowledge.
You know.
Not to my knowledge. I will say this. These officials are independent contractors. If you're working the SEC, you could also work the ACC, you could work Big 12, Sun Belt, whatever, Conference USA. There's no restriction on it. I don't think it's a good idea to have an official call in 5 or 6 games a week, but they're going to take the work where they can get it, because they're going to make as much as they can. So I don't know if he got sat down by the SEC, but he has the availability to call other conferences. And that might have been what was going on, Joe. That's a possible explanation.
Okay. I do remember reading something a few years back that where he had been is the first time he'd not been asked to do the NCAA tournament for a while. And, I mean, he is all over the place. You've got to admit, he's kind of hard to take sometimes. But I didn't know.
I was watching a cricket match, and I think he was out there calling that one, too, from England. He's everywhere. But
I'm sure he is.
Yeah, he's and you know what's interesting is he gets high marks as far as an official. I would just prefer him being a little bit less, as you said, demonstrative. He got in trouble a while back when a player, I don't remember what team it was, maybe a North Carolina player, went over to talk to him and he turned his back on him and refused to even talk to him. He later apologized for that immature act, and he should have, but he's been calling for a long time, and again he's revered as one of the better officials out there.
I don't think he makes a whole lot of mistakes. He is that kind of guy, though, that in the last 3 seconds, if there's anybody gonna blow a whistle, it'll be him. But anyway, well, thanks a lot. Good to have you back.
Good to be back. Thank you, Joe.
Appreciate it, Joe. Let's go next to Ryan. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Fine, and yourself?
doing pretty well. I had two questions, and I guess since we're talking about the referees right now, I'll start with that one. But did anything ever come out about the referee that bumped Coach Barnes a couple of weeks ago? That seemed to escalate pretty quickly.
It did. I do not remember seeing anything in terms of a follow-up. I didn't see anything that said he wasn't working, and some thought that could be the case, that he might just not be in the rotation for the next week or so, the next two-game swing where it would be weekend and then midweek. I never saw anything like that, and the SEC isn't one to say that here's what we're doing in terms of discipline, if any indeed was handed down. So, no, I did not see anything further than all the video that that circulated.
It did make you wonder, because Rick Barnes said he was satisfied with the way the SEC handled it. So,
yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, what would have satisfied him? He wouldn't say, but it made you wonder.
Yeah, I was just curious what the outcome might have been there. And then in regards to Lamonte Turner, I know the guys were there last night at the game. They talked to him, post-game. And was Lamonte Turner, was he involved in some of the post-game talks to the team, or did he just completely remove himself from all team activity?
No, he's been around. Yeah, even with the exception of the time that he had his surgery, but it was a very quick return to the sidelines. He's been at practice. Yeah. He's had a persistent and consistent connection with this team.
Ryan, as I recall, he was away from the team around the Christmas holidays after he announced he wasn't going to play anymore. And then he came back when the second semester started and has been on the sideline. I can't say he's been on the sideline for every game since, but I know I've seen him there for some.
Yeah, I haven't necessarily been looking for him. I just haven't noticed. So that's why I asked the question.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Ryan, awesome. Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day. Thank you very much. We'll get a break. When we return, Ball of Confusion. It's a documentary that was produced by Knoxville's own Silk Cozart. He joins us next as the premiere takes place tomorrow night at Cinnabar in Westtown. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. And we, as a city, have seen premieres before, but there is a special event that'll be taking place tomorrow at Cinnabar in Westtown, as it will be the premiere, and it's actually going to be a big-time event, and that is Ball of Confusion. And we've talked with this gentleman before. He's a favorite son of Knoxville, and it's always great to cross paths. Silk Cozart joins us. Silk, how are you?
I am absolutely wonderful, and it's great to be on the show.
Well, it's great to have you. If you would, tell us what's taking place tomorrow with the premiere, Ball of Confusion.
Well, Ball of Confusion is the documentary that's taken me 15 years to make, myself, Keith Zimmerman, and Jim Johnson here. So it's the history of basketball and its global impact. So it's not just basketball, it's history as well. And the premiere, we're having a premiere here in Knoxville tomorrow at the Cinnabar, but it's for the people that helped me, all the people in Knoxville that's helped me over the last 15 years. And, of course, they're going to bring their friends and family, so it'll be a lot of people there for that. And so we'll probably have to have another premiere, a second premiere later, but this is just to thank all those people that have helped me over the years. And then the movie will be released a few weeks later. I just wanted Knoxville to see it first.
Well, you have been very busy. How pleased are you with the finished product? We talked about a year or so ago. What is it like to have this across the finish line?
Well, it's a great feeling. I guess it's the closest thing to having a baby. No, but you know, it's really it was a challenge, but it's rewarding as well. It's exactly what we wanted to. We got to do exactly what we wanted to do, and that is educate and entertain. And we also will be featuring the first basketball used in that 1936 Olympic game between the United States and Canada. So I'll have that ball at the premiere tomorrow night. So that'll be something interesting. Hitler chose that ball. He wouldn't have any American products. So we have different artifacts things like that. It's just an interesting movie in itself.
Silk, what led to the title Ball of Confusion?
Well, as you know, being a music connoisseur, Ball of Confusion was a major, major number one song in 1968 by the fabulous Temptations. Mm-hmm. And because today's world is a ball of confusion, I had to do it. I just had to name it something that people would think about, you know. But the fact that this movie is a positive influence and how basketball has brought countries together. That simple game that James Naismith created in 1891. And by the way, it wasn't created to make money. It was created because the football players didn't have any exercise. They couldn't do anything outdoors. It was too cold. So Naismith just created something for them to do. And it's grown a little bit since then, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. What impact has basketball made on your life?
That is such a powerful question, because the game of basketball teaches us life skills, how to deal with other people, not only people where you live, but people from other countries, other nationalities. It gets you ready for the business world in a certain way. So it's influenced me that way. So when I stopped playing basketball, you know, that day that you shoot a jump shot and you come down and you hear a crack and you're like, whoa, what was that? You know, Oh, and a knee goes, oh, and then an ankle. And then you're like, okay, I guess I better stop playing. But the influence of the game doesn't stop. It never stops. So it's made me aware of how many things that we can do when we quit playing a sport or something that we feel like we were meant to play. So it's beyond that. It allowed me to travel the world. It's allowed me to meet wonderful people of all walks of life. And it's allowed me to be able to teach the things that I've learned to the younger, not only just younger players, but younger filmmakers and just people in general. And it keeps going. I don't think it ends. You know, it doesn't stop. It's a growing and learning process. And I enjoy it, and I love what basketball has done. I was inducted in the Small College Basketball Hall of Fame and the Larry Smith Award a couple of months ago. And I was able to put a scholarship at my school, at my alma mater, King University. But I put the scholarship not in my name, but in my beautiful, wonderful mother's name. And she's with us. She's here. So I wanted her to see that and know how much I love her and know how important that is, that we uplift our mothers. You know, dads, too. You know, I know my daughter's Nikki's listening, so, you know, I know you uplift them. But moms, we all come from moms. And that's the main thing. We should take care of our mothers because they took care of us. And so I learned that. I knew that before I played basketball, by the way. But that's some of the things I've really learned. And I want to share those things with people that have interest. And I made this movie, by the way, not for basketball fans. I made the movie for people that really didn't know that much about basketball or maybe have never been to a basketball game. And they see the movie, they're going to go, wow, I didn't know Naismith invented the football helmet. I didn't know that the Harlem Globetrotters helped bridge countries together when they were at war. And they would stop the war, allow the Globetrotters to come into South America, play the game. After the game, allowed them to get on the plane and go back to America and started the war back up. But then the combination of the beauty of the game and the fun that people were having, the two cultures, the two countries, it allowed them to now talk. So after that game, they became friends. The countries became friends. I mean, that's phenomenal to me. I think that's great. It's not just a game. That's I'm in love with the game and what it does.
What was it like, and what was your reaction when you first found out that you were indeed getting the Larry Smith Award?
Well, first of all, Mr. Larry Smith, I heard about him and just a wonderful man. I knew that it wasn't about how many points one scored or how many rebounds or how many assists. I knew it was what basketball has done for me or the person that was up for the award and what in turn we have done for the world or for our community from the fact of basketball has done for us. So I was ecstatic. I was like, there's only one award a year, and you know how many colleges there are in the country. I said, you mean they're giving it to me from Carnes King University, which was King College when I was there. And I still get chills about it.
We saw a very significant loss for the world of basketball, and you, of course, shared afterwards what it was like to know Kobe Bryant, and I'm just wondering what has been your reaction, and what's it like to have this project done at this point in time when so many are taking time to recognize and remember Kobe?
Well, as you stated, Kobe and I were friends, and I met Kobe when he first came to L.A. before anybody knew or even heard about a Kobe Bryant. He was 17 years old, and I was guest starring on a show called Sister, Sister, and he was doing a cameo on there, like the high school heartthrob, and I was, you know, guest starring on there. And we met, and I said, so what team did you play for? And he goes, oh, I'm going to be playing for the Lakers. I went, yeah, sure you are. And he goes, no, I'm really going to be playing for the Lakers. I said, really? And about 2 months later, there we go. So I've known him since then. He was very good to me. I spoke to him the Friday before the crash. Mm. Spoke to his producer of the movie he was working on. He said, I sent him the movie, and he was going to view it the weekend and call me on Sunday. So I woke up to Sunday, the radio and the TV saying that. I thought I was in a nightmare. I still think about it. So it affected me, and it affected so many millions of people that never met him. So the people that were with him, and you see how Shaq took that. We've talked, and it's, but you know, you look at the positive things he left. Work ethic. The only person I've ever seen the work ethics had work ethics like Kobe was Michael Jordan, and he basically worshipped Michael. He every move that Michael did, he would sit there since he was a kid and just watch Michael, and then try to imitate it in the mirror. And he would tell me all these things. He said, you know, Michael sticks his tongue out, but I'm not going to stick my tongue out because it might get cut off if I get hit. I always remember him saying that. So, yeah, it affected me a lot. And I have a little tribute at the end of my movie that I had the movie locked. As a director, once you lock the movie, you don't go back in. But I had the movie locked, and then that happened, and I went back in the movie and put a little something in the end, and I think people will appreciate that. His wife really appreciates it. And the other friends. So yeah, and so many people have gone in the last 15 years that I was making this movie. And that's the thing about a documentary, you know, it's constant. You can keep building and building. It never stops. So you have to figure out, okay, when do I end it? When do I stop this particular show? Because you gather archives and pictures and videos that no one's ever seen before. We have footage of the 1936 Olympics. We have footage of the basket, the peach basket going up. I mean, nobody has that. So I'm excited to share that. And I'm just excited to share it with Knoxville. Like I said, this first premiere is just really for the friends and family to help me work on it. But I'm going to have a separate premiere before the movie comes out all over the country just for Knoxville and the surrounding areas. So, but this is, I'm excited, you know. And we're premiering my new beers, Country Roads, there as well. So I'm excited about that.
Well, I saw that, and also tasting of your new whiskey. Should you consume that before or after the documentary?
Well, you know, you do a little bit before just to get you going, and then after you finish it, after you finish the film, then you take a little bit more to relax. So, no, the bourbon whiskey, it's a blend. It's just called Silk, and it's not ready to be in stores yet. So we're just doing these taste testings around the country. So we're having that tomorrow night at Open Court, and which, by the way, it's been some wonderful people support me for this, for the premiere, such as Mike Baker of Baker Insurance. He's a wonderful guy. He's helped so many people, and Knox Room Service. These people have just so nice to me. Haley, there is just so. I just wanted to give a shout out to them, and you know, I'm just really happy to be in Knoxville, Tennessee, because I've traveled the whole world, and this is the best place I've ever been or lived.
So how many people worked with you on this documentary?
From the day one, I'd say I tried to count them, and a little bit over 300.
Oh, God.
From New York to Chicago to L.A. to Knoxville, you know, to Florida. It's been an absolute wonderful ride. And we're going to do – I'd like to do, you know, the history of baseball, the history of football, the history of soccer. So this is something like you might look at it as like a pilot maybe for upcoming docuseries. You never know.
Was there,
what can come out of something like
this. Was there one particular incident that led you to say, I want to do this documentary on basketball?
There was a series of elements that caused me to make this movie. First of all, I'm a fan, you know, and I see the game. I'm probably like a lot of the ex-ball players. You play up to a point and you don't play anymore. You go to a game and you can't stand it because you want to play. You know, the whole time you're moving. You're like an ex-boxer who's moving around watching a boxing match. It's hard for me to watch a basketball game. I see so many things. I feel so many things. And I know people hate to go to basketball games with me because I'm yelling. I'm like, that's a charge. Or, you know, what is he? How? Why would he set a pick and roll with his back toward the ball? You can't receive a pass. You're NBA players do. So I get crazy. So I should go to games by myself. I know. But me and my daughter are the same. Nikki's the same way. She's like, people will look at us like, what are you guys doing? Watch the game. You know, but a series of things led to this film. And because I have so many friends that are playing in the NBA and used to play in the NBA, Oscar Robinson's my business partner in this movie. And the Big O, you know, he averaged a triple double.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize that. In the NBA, playing against the best players in the world. So he's throughout this film. As you know, he's player of the century. So after the 100 years are up, they're going to have another player of the century. So.
Hey, Silk, it's always great to catch up with you, and can't wait to see what's up next in terms of when you have the premiere for Knoxville after this with family and friends. But I'm wondering, as you just talked about other things that you'd like to do and looking at the origins of other sports, is there a project now that you've got up next on your to-do list, or is it getting a feel for whose story you want to tell next?
There's a couple of them. And you know, documentaries I love because they're real. Inherit the Land is a movie that took place in the turn of the century that shows a little town in North Carolina called Marvin, North Carolina. And they didn't have slaves. They didn't – white and blacks lived together in this little town. They treated each other like family. And I found that book, Inherit the Land, and I thought by Gene – and I said, wow. This would be a great movie. So we're making the documentary, and now we're going to make the movie after the documentary. So that fascinates me.
Oh.
And there's other films as well, but you know I'm a sports guy, so look for some sports type movies coming up pretty soon too.
Well, hope all goes well with the premiere for family and friends tomorrow, and can't wait to see the finished product. And we always appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, Silk. Best of luck, my friend.
I appreciate you guys. And if people want to come and taste Country Roads beer, they can come about 8 o'clock at the Cinnabar, and Regal is promoting my new beer. They're taking my beer. So that's a good thing.
So that'll be at 8 or so.
Yes. From 8 to probably 9:30 or 10, they can come and taste it and check it out and buy it and all that.
All right. Well, good luck with everything. Silk, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, guys. I love you, Knoxville.
All right. Thanks, Silk. Do appreciate you. And that's Silk Cozart. We'll get a break. We'll be back with a final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
If it weren't for sports, we'd be forced to play that crap other stations play. Anybody need that? Nobody. 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Final segment to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson, Jimmy Hyams, a part of the program as well, and we look forward to catching up with John McClain here in less than 10 minutes. Do have a little information on Mike Nance. While he has continued to work basketball games for other conferences, has not worked, I believe, an SEC game since then.
Interesting. Okay,
yes.
That's the official that bumped
Correct.
Rick Barnes, okay?
Yes, and then looked at Barnes as if he had bumped him and actually,
right.
I think, said, did you bump me? No,
yeah.
You walked into him.
Yeah.
Let's go to Randy. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Randy.
Hey, John and Jimmy. How you doing?
Doing all right.
Randy.
How are you?
Good. I was hoping you could get me on there with my friend Silk. I was wanting to say, who don't know Calvin Cozart? That's in the words of Bernard King 43 years ago at a party. He was asked that question, and Bernard, I'm not going to tell you what Bernard was doing. He was partying hard, though, I'll say that. And he was asked if he knew Silk or Calvin Kozart, and he said, who don't know Calvin Kozart? So I was wanting to kid Silk about that. Silk's just a great friend. We've been friends, I guess, since about 73. But looking forward to seeing that tomorrow night. And wanted to bring up something about ice hockey for a minute. And I might owe Mike Murray and the Ice Bears an apology here. Of course, the time I saw him a few years ago, the play was pretty bad. But I saw a game the other night. The level of play has improved so much in the SPHL compared to just two or three years ago. And I don't know why the ECHL, AHL, and NHL does not recognize the SPHL, but they do not. The play is getting a lot better. It really is. I saw a game the other night, and I was impressed. And I've always liked Mike Murray, but it's really a lot better, and I wish the NHL would recognize the SPHL now.
Well, I'll say this, the ECHL has an agreement. They have a connection to and an agreement with the SPHL. They've had about six or seven players called up by the ECHL, the Ice Bears have.
Oh, well, that's good. I'd seen I Googled a few years ago, and it said that it may have been the NHL. It said they didn't recognize the SPHL. And at the time I saw that, I could agree with them a few years ago, but I am impressed with the level of play now. It's a lot better. But anyhow, you guys going down to see Silk tomorrow night at the theater?
I'm traveling, or I would be there.
And we're still on the air.
Okay, I understand. Hey, thanks for clarifying the palm ball issue for me the other night, too. I don't hear it like I used to, that pitchers were throwing a palm ball. I just don't hear that terminology much anymore. So thanks for clarifying that.
All right. Well, Randy, we always appreciate it. Thank you. We'll get a break and be back with John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. He joins us next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.